Hello, you're listening to Ten Radio on 105.3 FM and tenradio.org with me, Julian Mellor, and this is the beginning of our election interviews. Every morning at 9 o'clock this week, Ten Radio will be broadcasting live interviews with each of the candidates standing in the Taunton Deane constituency. These interviews will be repeated at various times before Election Day on the 8th of June, and they will also be available as podcasts from our website. Today we're talking to Rebecca Powe, the Conservative Party candidate, and then on Tuesday, tomorrow, we'll be talking to Gideon Amos from the Liberal Democrats. On Wednesday, we'll be talking to Alan Dimmock from UKIP. On Thursday, it's Martin Jevon from Labour. And on Friday, it's Clive Martin from the Green Party, all at 9 o'clock each morning. We've asked our listeners to send in questions, and we thank all of you who have taken the time to do so. They've been incredibly useful in directing our interviews, but apologies if your question hasn't made it through. So, today in the studio, we have Rebecca Powe, Conservative candidate in this year's general election. Welcome to Ten Radio, Rebecca.
Morning, Julian. Very nice to be back in Wibberliskum again.
Good. And you were first elected to represent Taunton Deane 2 years ago. So what made you want to be an MP?
No, well, I've been asked that question many times, Julian, and I'll give you a short or a long answer. But part of it was that, obviously, I've worked all my life. I've brought up my family, my three children, but I did get pretty involved in our community locally, actually around Taunton, really, and in our village and where we live, and in quite a number of issues. And I did start to get very fed up with people moaning about things. And I'm a great one for saying, well, if you don't think it's good enough, why don't you join in and try and do something about it? So that was actually one of my motivations. And also, as I got older, I am a great one for, you know, if you can do anything, try and get involved and contribute. So it's one of the things I always say when I go into schools, you know, try and use what talents you've got and do try and contribute. And I was also approached by some local people in the area to say, Rebecca, have you ever thought about standing for Parliament? Would you like to try? And actually it did really motivate me to go through the long and somewhat grueling process of getting there. But I did have one or two key things in mind, one of which was that I did want to try and do better for Taunton Deane, because I did feel that we didn't really get very much attention. We weren't often mentioned. If you listen to anything from Parliament or you listen to any or read any write-ups nationally, I mean, how often were we mentioned? Indeed, how often was Somerset mentioned, really, for years and years? And I did have an overriding impression that we didn't perhaps get as much funding coming our way or as much infrastructure or improvement in roads as you might see when you go north, or certainly up, you know, towards the Midlands. So I thought, well, perhaps I could be a stronger voice if I get there and I can speak up for us. But also, I think, you know, I do have quite a rural and environmental background, and really I did think, I wonder if I could just influence that area if I get there, as well as working for Taunton Deane, to try and open up that wider environmental agenda that is my background, my training, and get it more on the radar, because I know, and I think it's probably an area you're quite interested in. We do have a very rural area, but even in our urban areas, all these things matter to us about the soil, the water, the air, and all of that. So that was on my agenda as well. So there's quite a lot to why I went there, but those were some of the driving forces.
So do you think Taunton Deane is now more in the spotlight? I mean, that one of the reasons Somerset is most often associated with, I think, of late, is the floods.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Glastonbury.
There's that as well. But the floods is what most people think of when you say you're from Somerset.
They do.
Claim credit for those. But no. Do you think that things have changed in the last 2 years in terms of the profile of Somerset and Taunton Deane?
This is not sing blow my own trumpet, but I absolutely know they've changed. And the flooding was a good issue, wasn't it? Because people knew about Somerset because it was flooded, and so they thought, let's bypass it. So actually that wasn't good. So we've worked very hard to change that perception, to say everything is functioning, businesses function, you know, come to Somerset. And that's worked very, very well. And this government has made a massive steps to improve the situation in terms of the flooding and putting in the nuts and bolts in the framework so that, A, it shouldn't happen again, but we do know how to deal with it all. But we are on the radar. I mean, Taunton is never, if you look through Hansard now, it's never ever been mentioned so much in the history of Parliament. I mean, although it wasn't, of course, always called Taunton Deane, but Taunton and its Wellington with Liscombe and all that. And partly that is when I went there, I did get stuck in absolutely immediately because I thought there's no point in going there if you don't. And virtually every single time, if you look at my speeches that I speak, it is to refer to something in Taunton Deane with a reference, you know, whether it's something that needs highlighting or something that's a problem or an issue. I always reference it back to where I come from because that is actually, I am the voice of Taunton Deane and the people here in Westminster and the voice of Westminster here. And so that is part of how it works.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're standing again. I mean, obviously you thought that you were going to be MP for 5 years. That was rather cut short, but you're standing for the next 5 years. In a moment, we'll come on to what you think your priorities as an MP should be for those coming years. But a question first, because looking at the Conservative Manifesto, which rather sadly I've spent the weekend doing.
And got it here, Julian.
You've got it there, I've got it here as well. There's a lot of references in there to ordinary working families, and indeed the whole manifesto is dedicated to ordinary working families. And I think a question in my mind, and probably a question in a lot of people's minds, is who is an ordinary working family? How do you define an ordinary working family? Is that me? Is that Derek? Is it you? Who is the ordinary working family?
Do any of us like being called ordinary? I don't know. But I will say that's in contrast to Labour, who have always kept banging on about the working people. And I go, hold on a minute, aren't we all working people, you and I? So I think that's something I've always found deeply insulting, mm-hmm. To think that there's only certain sections of society that are classed as working people. Hard-working people, basically most of us, you know, it doesn't matter what you earn, you're probably working very hard doing it. It's really, I would say, it's really a manifesto about fairness more than anything else. I think you'll find that is mentioned a lot in the manifesto. It's all about giving everybody, enabling people to have a decent life whereby they don't feel they are struggling every time, whereby there's an even spread of funding where those people who need help and deserve help will always be looked after, and where those who have some more to give will give it. But it's not about jealousy and saying you've got something and I must have it. It's not about mm-hmm. that. It is about enabling people to have a decent life.
So it clearly says ordinary working families. What about people who aren't working, people who are retired, people who can't work through disability, people who are students?
Yes,
are they excluded from this?
I've just referred to that, and there's a lot in the manifesto about the elderly and coping with them, and indeed they've already had a lot of attention from this government. Pensioners are getting £1,250 more as a result of the change in the pensions from this government, and they've had the triple lock and they've had all the incentives, you know, rightly so at that time, because they'd been very underfunded for many years under Labour, if you look back at their statistics, so that had to be rectified. And those at the other end of the scale, as you rightly refer to, anyone with a disability or needing help and support, they are always being looked after. And as you know anyway, 4 million people under this government have been taken out of paying any tax at all, and that's going up, that ban, so more people will be taken out of that. That's all about putting money in what you might call ordinary people's pockets. So, and in order for that to happen, we have to have an economy that functions. We have to have business that wants to create business, wants to take on jobs, so that they then could pay the taxes to help these people, you know, who were taken out of the section at the bottom. Mm-hmm. But we need to help. Always, always. I'd never not do that. And I see so many of these people in my surgeries, all of whom we are helping.
So the manifesto is for everyone. It's dedicated to ordinary working families, but it is for everyone. So in terms of income, there is no income bracket for ordinary working families. It's not saying, depending on income, you are an ordinary working family.
Well, how would you do it? I think, you know, let's have a chat about it.
Well, in parts of the manifesto, it says that it's people who are earning below median income.
Yeah, so that, I think that's around 25,000, you know. But I think it's, I always think it's a danger with anything to put a figure on something, because then, you know, interviewers like you just hook people on it. You know, it depends how you live and how you're managing. Is it one parent? Is it two parents? It's impossible to describe one family as being the, you might have been able to in the, perhaps the 1940s, you might have had, you know, mum, dad and two children, mm-hmm. but that's changed, hasn't it? So you can't put a specific name or title on it. What you've got to do is enable people, however they live, to live a decent life. And there's a lot in the manifesto in order to do that. And if you look at the issues on housing, if you look at our housing white paper, which I've been very involved in Parliament, there's a lot of really good things in there to enable people on whatever scale they are to have a house, whether they are buying a house, whether they are rent. There's a lot there to help the rental market. There's a lot there for affordable housing, a lot more indeed, because we still need to build more affordable housing. There are lots of options for buy to share, you know, buy a bit and rent the rest, or rent it all and then gradually buy a bit when you can afford it. There are so many things in there for what you might call ordinary working people, okay. which is probably your and my children.
Yep. Okay. So we'll come back to housing in a little bit. Next 5 years, though, what will your priorities be? As an MP, so it's not your party priorities, it's not your personal and your own life priorities, but as an MP, what will your top three priorities be for the next 5 years?
Top priorities continue to be to bring forward the pledges I made when I became the MP. I hope you've had a look at my one of my leaflets, yep. Julian, because it lays out quite a lot of information about what I've done. I set out priorities when I became the MP, and I have delivered on every single one of the pledges I made to the people of Staunton, which I'm really pleased about that. You know, and that involves a lot of endeavour, a lot of working with all the local stakeholders, including the council, which is Conservative, and that's helpful. But, you know, of course, when I'm the MP, I'm representing everybody, regardless of what their party is. So I'm going to continue to work on this. So far, I've managed to attract, with these joint stakeholders, £300 million for funding to Taunton Deane. That is the kind of central government funding we have never, ever had in Taunton Deane. And a lot of that is for infrastructure projects. So that's for the expansion of Junction 25 on the M5, turning M5 into a smart motorway system. It's for the Toneway dual carriage in the Creech Castle, and it's for the upgrade of the rail station, which I know lots of people from Wiver Liscombe use, and at the moment you can hardly even park there sometimes you come from here.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before. I've never had a problem parking at the railway
station. It depends
what
time you go. I've had that raised with me from out this way, I can tell you that for sure. That was raised with some people just not very far from here, business people. So I'm going to keep working on those, because we need to make sure, A, that money comes through, and B, that you know, the projects are carried out and there are more things people want to do. I shall continue all my work with the rural and farming community, feeding in ideas. And, of course, for them, it's very important we get the right Brexit deal. And I'm working hard feeding on ideas about that and how that's best to be carried out. So a lot of work to be done then.
It's funny that I did just, it's one of the wonders of technology. You can do a word search on a document. And I did a word search on agriculture,
yeah.
in the manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
So...
You've diverted slightly from what... But just finish. I'd love to talk about that. Yeah, that's very okay. interesting. Let's just finish with my priorities. I got, as you know, the fairer funding money for Taunton Deane. I'm sure you're going to ask me about education in a minute. And I'll carry on working with the schools, as I have from the very beginning, because I want to have the best schools we can. I ran... an older people's fair, actually, which was incredibly successful, which was with a theme of good health in old age and helping people to live a healthier, better life. And we had hundreds of people turned up to it, and over 30 stands of different organisations, bodies and charities that came to that. So I'm going to build on that, to be running another one of those, and that's already pretty fully booked with people wanting to come and have stands. I'll continue my environmental strand of work, which and we'll talk about that in a manifesto, lots in the manifesto on that, and there's a lot I want to build on that with my my ancient woodland and my microbeads ban that I've been very involved in, and my animal welfare work, and sporting and cultural offer. I'm working very hard with people in Wellington on the monument project, the restoration project, so that will be ongoing, and we're now trying to apply for more money so that we can really pull that project off. That's a big community project, and I'm working in Taunton with the art fraternity to build our cultural offer in Taunton with Art Taunton. So there's an awful lot still going on, which is why, you know, with people's support, I'd be honoured to be the MP again, so that we can carry on this work, because it started and lots in place, lots achieved already, but lots more to do. I mean, I think there's a terrific role to be played there.
So it's quite a long list. I mean, of those, what are the most important to you?
Well, the economy, making sure we have a sound economy has to be really high up there in Taunton Deane, because we do need the jobs. So it's still working to bring forward these areas that will increase and up productivity. That's where the infrastructure comes in. That's where the university status for the college comes in. So that we've got to retain younger people here and skill them up. You know, it's starting to work, but we need to do more. So that's a priority, because we do have to have a successful economy to make everything else work. That's absolutely essential. But within that, then, it's enabling people to have a good life here, enabling those houses we're building to be good places to live, to be green, to have cycleways. And that'll be another of my priorities. I've already started working with the cycling community, but, you know, to bring forward some more of those things. And we've got funding now. We've got funding streams we can apply for those things. So it's to make life good and healthy and happy for the people who live here.
And that's ordinary working families, and
that's everybody, Julian. That's that's the elderly, you know, because we have an increasing elderly population. That's people who perhaps aren't lucky enough to be what you describe as an ordinary working family, and everybody else in between. I mean, you know, we want to have a genuinely healthy and happy and successful population.
So the Institute of Fiscal Studies said that the people who will be hit most by the Conservative manifesto are people on low incomes and benefits. So does that mean that what you're saying about everyone benefiting, it benefits everyone, but some more than others?
I haven't read that from the Institute of Fiscal Studies, because I think you can make anything of statistics if you choose them, because as far as I see, that's absolutely not the case. We have actually helped, as I said, 4 million people to pay no tax at all, and those are the people on lower incomes. And I've met people out and about who say that's been great, we've got more money in our pocket to spend. But it's not just about that, but people, you know, are enabled in other ways. You know, we all use our roads and our transport systems, and we have street lighting and all that's all provided by the taxes that we all pay. You know, they have free education, those that need it get school lunch and now breakfast, and they'll still get that. And those people that can't afford lunch will still get lunch, and now they'll get breakfast. Those people at the lower end, well, in fact, indeed all people, will get 30 hours of free childcare now. That has never, ever happened before. And it's this government that's bringing it forward. And on the disability and all of that sector, when we came into government, well, under the coalition, 7 out of every 10 people were claiming some kind of benefit in this country. This government wanted to have a look at that and try and bring it down to somewhere nearer 4 out of 10. And I meet people, I've been knocking on doors every day, Gillian, who are still so angry if they know that the person next door is claiming benefits, not going to work, when they are the hard-working people, ordinary hard-working people, going to work. This was raised with me actually this very week with a lady I met, saying, you know, well, perhaps I won't bother to retrain as a teacher because it's really tough. It's really tough for me, and I've got I'm a single parent, and I've got a child. And I said, do you know what? You are such a great role model to your child, sitting at home taking benefits. What do you think your child's going to think of when you're grown up? She's going to think, what a great mum you are. And it is tough, but life is tough. You know, so we want to help. Well, we are helping her because she is getting help with a whole range of things, and for her child, and those are the people that do need help. And we will always do that. You know, we'd be a poor society if we didn't. Mm-hmm.
We had a question from Mary, and this starts to go into the health issues and social care. But I'm just picking up on it now because of what you say about helping people. So Mary, her husband is retired. He has dementia. He receives his pension and an attendance allowance. She, in order to look after him, has had to close down her business, so she's lost income from that. She would, if she was under retirement age, get a carer's allowance. She is over retirement age, so she doesn't get a carer's allowance. So she's had to close her business. She doesn't get the carer's allowance, but she is spending her entire life caring for her husband. So that seems, yeah, a system which is clearly failing her and probably many other people like her. And she wrote to us, yeah, really quite angry,
yes,
saying this is not being recognised and it is saving the government billions, she thinks, in what seems a very, very unjust situation.
Yeah, well, there are lots of people. Sorry, can you tell me the lady's name again?
Mary.
I mean, I know life must be really tough, and what a great job you're doing. And it is tough. And we've got some unbelievable people taking on the role of carers. And she raises some very, very valid points. And it is an issue that we are actually looking at and dealing with. And we are going to bring in a bill that deals with this whole care sector, and indeed particularly looking at the issue of care workers, who also need a lot more attention because they've fallen slightly. There's no set codes for them. I fully agree we need to look at their pay. This is partly why we have brought in the living wage, which, you know, everybody wanted, but it is to try and enable people who are carers to get a better wage. This is something we're also doing to give these ordinary working families more people in their, more money in their pockets. But you can actually understand for employers that's caused a lot of problems. But to get back to Mary, yes, this is. But she is one of those people who is highlighting why we got to do something about social care, which is a bit of a, you know, been a bit of a hot potato this week. But it's absolutely right that we deal with it, because there are an increasing number of people like Mary who find that their other half gets dementia, and we don't know, do we, how many of us are going to go that to get that, but about 50% of people now in care homes have got dementia, and it's something that previous governments hadn't really planned for. So that's why we've got to deal with that now, and why we've got to have an even stronger economy to generate the funds that we can deal with these issues for people like Mary. And you've given me quite a few of her circumstances, so I don't particularly want to talk about her individual case. But we have certainly in my office met with lots of people who have got similar issues, and we have helped point them in the right direction for other funding and care that they might be able to get that perhaps they don't know about, because there are lots of, and I've met quite a few on the doorstep. There's one in Wiverliscombe this week who was a carer at home with a mum with dementia, and it was in Cotford St Luke actually, with a mum with dementia, and we have actually been able to put this lady in touch with some other organisations and bodies that will be able to help us. So if Mary wants to get a hold of me, Mary, honestly, I would really be delighted to talk to you and see if I can give you a bit more help and see what we could do. I think the Care Act will help to deal with that, and it needs to help, and we as a society really do need to get in and tackle this problem.
Okay.
But it's not something that we should not talk about, and it's not really something that should be for Labour or for the Liberals or whatever. It's something we've actually got to just nail, isn't it?
We'll take a break in a few minutes, but before we get there, it seems to me that there's a pretty good rule of thumb in life, and probably in politics, perhaps more so in politics, that you never say never. So you just can't see what's going to be coming round the corner, and to say, I'm never going to do this, it puts you into a corner. So when it comes to Brexit, are there any circumstances in which you can think that you would say, actually, you know what, this just isn't going to work and we shouldn't be doing it?
I don't think that is a view I would go into this election with, or we have, the nation has voted for Brexit, haven't they? Like it or love it, Julian, the overall consensus of the nation, who had a choice in a fair and open and democratic election, was to leave. And as
so
you know...
there are no circumstances that you can think of in which we would say, well, Brexit means Brexit, but this is going to be so bad that we really need to rethink things.
The mandate is for Brexit. So we have to get the very, very best Brexit that we can get. And I'm confident that we will get that.
If we were going to have a bank collapse like we had in 2008...
It would be like having an election and the Wiverliscombe Wanderers win, you know, and then you say, oh, actually, I don't think people really meant that. Let's not do that. Let's not do that. You'd have riots on the streets. You'd be Zimbabwe, wouldn't you? You can't do that with the democratic system. What will happen, I am sure, is that all the right backing support will go into this negotiation, and then we will
forge a strong way ahead. In which as we get to that cut-off point in 2 years' time, there must be circumstances in which things are looking as if they could be so, so damaging to the country that the government has to say this is clearly not in the national interest. So if we were heading towards a financial collapse like we had in 2008, wouldn't that be circumstances in which things would have to be thought about again? If we were looking at, I mean, on the radio this morning, they were talking about security challenges if we can't share data. If we were looking at a collapse in economic growth, there's a huge number of variables that you can think of.
We're only guessing.
We're guessing at the
you're
moment.
You're guessing, Julian.
We're not guessing, because what I'm saying
or polls
is, would there be lines in the sand at which you say, we just cannot cross that line because it will be so damaging? Or do you say, it doesn't matter, we've voted for Brexit, and irrespective of what it's going to do to the country, we will do it?
As things stand, what we're talking about now is getting the very best Brexit negotiation we can.
You want to be elected for the next 5 years, so you will oversee Brexit. So in 2 years' time, or less than 2 years' time, as we approach it, will you vote for Brexit, come what may, irrespective of what it will do to this country?
I will be there feeding in and working with all the departments to ensure that we have the very best plan going ahead, which is what people wanted, Julian. That's what they voted for. And there'll be a lot within that. All of these areas people are concerned about will be worked out. EU nationals living here, and are people living abroad, the skilled workers we need, you know, all of these things are being worked on. It's not, you're trying to make it very black and white, Julian, and it isn't, and it will be worked through to have a full and fair discussion about it as we go forward. And I will be, people can rest assured that I will be here to be, and I will listen to them, and I will be, rest assured, I will be as strong as I already have demonstrated that I have been in 2 years working for the people of Taunton Deane. I am here for them to speak to. I will have the ear of government. That's the benefit of having an MP who is with the government that's in power. If you have an opposition MP, they have so much less influence. That's why I've been able to get the money for Taunton Deane, while I've been able to get my manifesto pledges about the environment into the manifesto, because people listen to me. So you've got to be confident, Julian, that they can still do that, and I will be there as the strong voice for them in Brexit.
Peter sent us a question, and he said that the referendum was, you know, it was a black and white vote, but it was a vote based on speculation. So shouldn't there be a second vote when we have the facts of Brexit?
The point was, there were a lot of facts, but an awful lot of people, you know, chose to read into the facts whatever they chose to read into them.
Some of them were £350 million a week for the NHS.
But there were lots of other facts people didn't take any notice of. You know, we can't go back over all that ground, you know, and we can't keep speculating about what if. You can't run a government on what if, what if, what if. You have to make decisions and you have to lead. And that's what the Conservatives are doing. And that's why our economy is so strong already, why we've got more businesses and small businesses than ever before in Taunton Deane, why Musgrave actually is a really excellent hospital, why, you know, we have got the funding for all the things we need. And yes, there are still things to do. You know, it's about being a leader and governing. It's not about changing your mind every 5 minutes. You know, it's about making decisions. Yes, you can take in the evidence as you go along, and you might sway a little bit this way, a little bit that way, but you have to make a decision and lead the nation.
Part of leadership is being able to acknowledge that some of your decisions maybe weren't the best ones, and you need to be able to review those. So when it comes to the Brexit deal is finally on the table, there will be a vote in Parliament, but as I understand it, the vote will be either accept the deal negotiated or walk away in every respect. Would you be willing to support, if there was a proposed amendment to that bill, would you support an amendment to say that there should be a vote in Parliament on whether we stay in the EU?
What I will do, Julian, is look at it when it arises. So this is in 2 years' time, and I'm confident that we'll have such a good deal that we will... that's what we'll do, we'll vote it through. But what you've got to remember as well, I think you're being very, very negative in your questioning, is that we are very important for the Europeans. We are their largest export market. They need us as much, if not more, than we need them. So it has to work for them as well as us. And already we've got lots of very good vibes about what's going to happen, because they need us, particularly in this this agricultural market. We're their biggest food market, you know. But plus, we've got the globe to look at. I think you're being very, very small in your market. I mean, even your previous MP saw that the global market was the big future. Indeed, he actually wrote a book about it and then left, didn't he, like a rat from a sinking ship. He left to go and advise on this area. He's not stuck working on Europe. You know, it's a big world out there, and we've got to be part of it. And indeed, this is a very, very exciting future. Let's not get dragged down to be so negative. There's a great future there, Julian, and we have to make it work for your children. And I met your son the other day, didn't I, up in the in the village square, and my children. You know, we'd be poor politicians if we didn't pull that off. Okay. And I'm determined that I'll be part of doing it.
Okay, so there I think we should take a pause. So Derek, you're going to Derek on the machines, you're going to put some music on. Right, welcome back. You're listening to 10 Radio, and you are listening to the first of our election broadcasts, which are taking place at 9 o'clock every morning this week and repeated thereafter. And today we are in the studio with Rebecca Powe, the Conservative Party candidate standing for Taunton Deane in the general election. We've been talking about Rebecca's priorities in the coming years. We've been talking about Brexit a little bit. Let's go on to education, Rebecca, which we've had some discussions about before.
Sure.
School funding seems to be something of a mess and something of a problem. At the moment, at primary schools, schools receive £2,800 per pupil, and the forecasts with current funding is that by 2019, that will have been reduced by £543 per pupil. That is a huge cut of funding, and that is resulting in schools having, which are already largely cut to the bone, having to reduce staffing, and certainly in Wiveliscombe, having to go from being a 9-class school down to a 7-class school. And we've had a question from Luca, which was, why should some children have a worse education because they have to put up with bigger classes?
Well, first of all, we want every child to have a good education, don't we? That's absolutely crucial to a child's start in life. And what I want to say, first of all, let's not be really negative about this again. Our children are getting a better education across the board than they have ever had before in this country. And that's because we've been able to fund the schools and we've got excellent teachers, excellent teaching assistants. And first of all, you know, they do such brilliant work in and out of our schools across the country and especially in Taunton Deane. So just to get some of the statistics, you know, we have got 1.8 million more children in good and outstanding schools than there were in 2010. So that was after years of the Labour government. And it is a record amount of funding that's going into schools. It's £40 billion. Pounds. That is a significant amount of money. And we have committed £23 billion for new school buildings. And Kingsmead, right here where we're sitting, is getting one of those buildings. And I know that they're very delighted with that. And rightly so, and they need it. And Richard Hewish is in Taunton. It's just getting a whole new arts centre. So these are all good and beneficial things. So let's not be totally negative. And also disadvantaged pupils. The pupil premium under this government has risen from £430 in 2010 to £1,320 for primary school children. So it's wrong to say that funding hasn't been going into schools and that this is not a top priority.
Except you can put,
it absolutely
you can put
is
funding
a top
into
priority.
Buildings, but where the cuts are really having an impact is the funding for teachers and for the staff in the schools, and that is where there are year-on-year cuts because, so this is in real terms, because there are so many inflationary pressures on the schools, such as national insurance increases, salary increases, extra pension contributions, apprenticeship levy. Every year the costs are going up, but the funding isn't going up. So year on year, there is a real cut in funding.
Those are obviously pressures that affect any business. To talk to any, you know, like the living wage that everybody wants is obviously now having a knock-on impact, and that will also be affecting the schools. And yeah, that's absolutely right. But also on that point, you know, you do know that I, since being the MP, worked with teachers, head teachers and parents to get a better deal on the fairer funding for pupils, because historically we were getting something like £2,000 less per pupil than the national average, and that was quite wrong. And our schools have done an amazing job producing such a good education for basically less money. So that has been recognised, and in this change to the formula, we are in Taunton Deane due to get 4.3% more per pupil. So let's just recognise that first. But and I've met with lots of the teachers. I met with a whole group of head teachers here just last week to understand their issues, and I do understand them, Julian, and they went through all the figures with me. And what I would say, we had a full and frank discussion with them and about what I could do as the MP and what I will do, and I promise I will do that. I will work with them because I think it's a really, really important issue. I mean, I was a school governor for 10 years. It's an area I feel very strongly about. But it does still come down to the economy. It does still come down to having an economy that is successful and buoyant so that we can put money where it's needed into education. And, you know, I will certainly be fighting for that. But you can't fight for that, and you are, unless you A, elected, and B, in the government, and C, you've got an economy that can deal with it. And it's easy. I know you'll have all the other candidates here, and they'll say we're going to put in 4 billion here and 10 billion there and 20 billion there, but none of them can really tell you where it's coming from. It's very easy to write to. I'd like to write you a cheque today to solve that problem, but I actually can't right now. But if I am the MP and I can work to get the ear of government and we've got the strong government, you know, we can sort some of these things out. But certainly things we can amend immediately are, we know what schools need some new infrastructure, you know, let's feed those things in. And you know, and certainly I think I've already proved, you know, through my work on the fairer funding issue that I did work so hard on and got the support of, that it is possible to do things. Mm. And I wouldn't, but what it wouldn't be, I think it's bad to pass on this issue to our children that everything is bad at school, because do you know what? It really isn't. You know, there's some fabulous teaching going on.
And no, but I think the indications are it is getting more and more difficult, and stress in the classroom is increasing.
Yeah, and on
so
that
the stress
issue,
on the teachers is increasing.
Yes,
that becomes stress on the children, that becomes stress on the parents, they pass the stress back to the teachers, and you end up with a vicious cycle.
Yes,
and that is because there aren't the resources to do the job properly.
Interestingly, one of the things that we are doing is rolling out mental health support in all schools. We're really tackling this mental health.
Except it's virtually impossible to get an appointment with CAMHS.
Well, across the board, we are. This is in the manifesto as well. The money will be available for training and advice on this, and speaking to the head teachers, they welcomed it. It's a really important issue, and in Parliament, I've spoken a lot about mental health and young people. I particularly have majored on the benefits of, you know, nature, exercise, and all of those aspects, which I'm sure you understand as an environment working in the environmental field. And lots of the teachers agreed with me about lots of these things, and lots of areas you can do actually don't cost any money, but like running the Daily Mile, you know, it's actually very successful in Scottish schools, is it getting the children, whatever they're wearing, it doesn't matter, you didn't have to have a posh gym kit, to do this exercise at some part of the day every day with the teachers. And the schools that do it, I think they actually told me they do it at Oak and Ninehead School,
yeah.
And it is really effective, because it really, and that costs nothing, you know.
Absolutely, so, and things so like that are important.
They are.
Yeah, you did mention mental health. if a parent tries to get a referral for their child to the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service, it is nigh on impossible. In school, it becomes harder and harder to get the support from outside agencies or specialists to deal with children who have mental health problems.
Yeah, that's why we are pouring money into it, Julian. We have put more money into mental health than any other government ever before, and we are continuing to do it, and we will be bringing forward a new mental health treatment bill.
So schools can expect to see real improvements amount of service they get.
That is the aim of it. It was this government, don't forget, that has raised this up the agenda, and we have given mental health parity with physical health for the first time ever. And so let's not keep knocking that. Let's look at, that's a positive move. Oh. You know, of course there's a long way to go. You can't suddenly do all of these things, you know, and it takes a long time. And in order to put them in place, you have to have the legislative framework in place. It's something I've really learnt whilst being in Parliament. You know, that's what you do. You are legislators, and it takes time to work through the nuts and bolts of these things. But we are working through those.
Yep.
So that's an area that I'm confident we will improve, and, you know, and we need to improve. You're right about that.
Okay. So another key plank of the education policy, and this is an area that has been asked by Mark, is about grammar schools. So if there is a proposal for a grammar school in Taunton, it might be a free grammar school, it could be one of the private schools, King's College, supporting it. If there is a proposal for a grammar school in Taunton, will you support it?
Well, the grammar school issue is part of the whole issue within the whole education framework about choice. It's all about choice. It's all about getting the best education, but it's all about having a choice. So there's a whole manner of schools one might set up now. You've got free schools. You've got a piece in our manifesto, actually, because there's been a clampdown on Roman Catholic schools, and there's been a big outcry from the church about that. So now we're going to, it'll be easier to, if you want to set up a, I actually went to a Roman Catholic convent. I'm not a Catholic, I'm a Protestant, but actually had a big effect on my life, and my moral code by which I live, I would say, largely came from the school I went to. And so it's all about freedom. We've got academies, we've got, so I don't actually see a grammar school arriving in Taunton Deane. You know, we haven't got any anywhere near us, have we? It's not really a big issue in the southwest grammar schools. And indeed, as they, if anybody wants to set one up, there's a really big presumption in favour of opportunities for the disadvantaged in these grammar schools. I think it's all about having an education system that delivers the best education in the best way.
So if one did come forward in Taunton,
well, we'd look at it when it arose. But I don't see it happening, Julian.
Right.
Okay. You know, we got actually a terrific raft of schools across Taunton Deane, haven't we? From states, the academies mixed right up through. Terrific schools like the Castle, you know, Heathfield, you know, the one here in Wibliscombe. We're really lucky. And let's not knock the independent schools. We've got four top class independent schools, all of whom are massive employers in the constituency, and they take loads of people on bursaries and all of that. You know, it's all there in the mix, isn't it, of schools. And what I have to do as the MP is make sure we're delivering a good education and make sure we've got the funding to deliver it. And, you know, rest assured, that's something I want to do. You know, I went to Parliament to try and make things like this work, because without a well-educated, skilled up, happy population of young people, you know, we're not going to have the best future. We need that, and there are lots of areas like the university, for example, just to broaden it out a little bit. You know, we've got the university centre status now for Taunton Bridgewater College, and we're moving on for university status, but it's going to be very targeted, so that the courses they run are devised directly working with business, so that we get the right type of courses. So we've got the first nuclear degree going on there, and that's been set up in connection with EDF at Hinkley Point and the Ministry of Defence working in Yeovil, and the businesses there around helicopters and there, and they've devised a specific course because they just couldn't find the, you know, the right young people coming through other universities, and it's running right here. I mean, mm-hmm. Is that not exciting?
Absolutely.
You know, and there are going to be other courses like that based on health, you know, and I see that as a great future.
Okay. Let's move on. The area that we had the most questions about was housing. And I think probably that is because it creates a lot of stress for people. It's about the availability of housing. It's even more so about the affordability of housing. We had one question from Justin, or a point really, that he lives in a 3-bedroom house. The rent that he has to pay would have gone up by, from £950 to £1,300 in the 3-year period per month. So that's the equivalent to paying £4,200 extra a year. And that's not unusual, because inflation in the rented sector is so, so high. What is the solution to that? What sort of solutions would you promote to this unaffordability of housing, the way that an entire generation is now really prevented from ever expecting to be able to buy?
That's interesting. I don't know where he's living, because that is an astronomical rise. I haven't noticed any rises like that, as high as that. Maybe people can tell me different around Taunton. That is high. That's a huge hike. £400 in, what did you say, 4 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know the nuts and bolts of that particular case at all, and he raises a good issue and an important issue, but that's why part of it is because of the shortage of housing. It's, if you look at it nationally, we simply haven't built enough houses for decades. You know, we've underbuilt. So that's a succession of governments. Let me speak. You've asked me a very, very long question. You know, under the Labour government, social housing fell by 420,000 homes, and the waiting lists increased by 70%, and house building was at its lowest in 2010 that it had been for years and years and years. And that is part of the problem. There simply isn't enough housing, which is why a landlord who's got a house, you know, can probably determine what rent he charges. So that's part of the problem, is providing enough housing, whether it's to buy or to let. And we are, this, our housing white paper has got a really big section in it on increasing the buy-to-rent market. But also, this government have brought in so many schemes to help people get onto the housing ladder, help to buy schemes, where by you put in so much and the government, you know, puts in X more so that you got enough money to put down your deposit. And now there is, I don't know whether, I've been out talking to a lot of housing associations, because lots of these new housing estates in Wellington and Taunton, you know, a whole section of them have to be affordable housing. You know, you can't get the planning permission for the estate without that. And there are lots of different ways to buy in or to rent into those markets by percentages of your property. And those offers are all improving, Julian, because we know how important it is to have a secure home. It's really essential. But also, we're looking in this white paper, interestingly, should we be offering more smaller units? Because, you know, young people, like students, and when you're younger, don't need so much space. So should we have some offers like that? So in Holland, you know, people live in these container houses, and they're happy to live in there for a year or 2 years, and they move on up the ladder. We're trying to free council houses where perhaps the person doesn't use the three bedrooms anymore, and move them into a flat or a smaller house, so that the family with three children can move into that house.
Although the lack of smaller units is,
yeah, so that's why that's absolutely why. But Taunton Deane is the first council, probably one of the only councils in the country, to have built new council housing, which was off down near Asda.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been to visit it. I have. I saw it during its whole process of building. It's very successful. First sort of new council housing in years and years, and they're due to build more. And the other thing that we're doing is freeing up more brownfield sites. You know, people all talk about building the brownfield sites, but that's been quite difficult because often they need cleaning up. So we've got a fund now for clear up, and we've got a special fund to enable just small and medium-sized builders to build on brownfield sites. So that means we can have more individual houses, housing estates. But I'm very pro the style and the vernacular, making them look good, but also be eco-friendly. They've got to have very high energy standards, and to deliver in all of those ways. So there's a raft of measures going on to deal with just this gentleman's query, so that I've got my own children on. We had this discussion yesterday around the table about, because they're renting, you know, about what are we going to do, and we have to do something, and this government is 100% committed to doing it. If you've ever heard the Housing Minister, Gavin Barwell, speak on this, he is phenomenal. He's got a phenomenal grip of the agenda and how we are going to deliver for people like this gentleman, because we've got to do it. You know, we've got to do it. And then it still comes back to a good economy, because if I haven't got a sound economy, you can't build all these houses, because people won't go into the businesses to build them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a really, really good point. And I personally, and I've been involved in that department, I think you probably know that, as the parliamentary private secretary to the housing minister. And it's an area I'm desperately interested in, and I'm working on, and I'm confident we are doing a lot. And
I think it is probably one of the biggest structural.
It is for our younger generations. It's going to influence how they grow up and what kind of lives they lead. You know, if we don't get it right.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of minutes left. 5 minutes left. Let's go on to a couple of other far from small subjects, but maybe deal with quickly. Climate change. There is a debate in Hustings and Bristol tomorrow, being run by with your climate action, which sadly you're unable to come to.
In Bristol?
Sorry, not in Wiverliscombe, not in Bristol. Did I say Bristol?
Yeah.
With the Climate Action are holding hustings tomorrow in Wiverliscombe, which sadly you're unable to come to. But what will you do in your next 5 years to ensure that climate is at the top of the agenda?
Well, I've met with lots of these people from WIVI Climate Change, and indeed all over the constituency in the different climate change streets, the grandparents for climate change, the transition groups, the Wildlife Trust. I work with all these people, and I hope they're confident that I'm doing that. And, you know, if there's one thing that I am doing in Parliament and will continue to do, and they can 100% rest assured that I'll keep doing that, it is to speak up on all of these things. And I have had the direct year of government on all of this, and I know that I have personally influenced these areas. And if you look at the manifesto, and I know you have, Julian, there's a whole chunk in there about the environment. We are absolutely committed to our climate change commitments, and I've even, since the election was called, the first thing I did was get on the phone to Theresa May and her department and the people writing the manifesto, working with the Conservative Environment Network and Stanley Johnson in the Environmentalists for Europe group, to press to say we have to make sure we remain world leaders on this issue, you know, because we have influence on the worldwide stage in this area, and we need to work together to continue to do that. And it's so important. And, you know, some people still think climate change isn't important, but we all know what it affects. It doesn't just affect us here in this country, it's the global influence, isn't it, where crops fail, where the climate's change. That's how you get up with famine, you end up with more refugees. You know, the issue is enormous, isn't it? And we have to tackle it. But, you know, rest assured too, I'm working on these. You could say I've got a sort of name in Parliament. People, oh, here comes a record, you're going to be talking about microbeads or ancient trees. But guess what? I'm getting them to follow me. You know, I've got a raft of colleagues. And if the election hadn't been called, I was about to launch a whole new strand within government on this. And I'll still do it when I get back there. And, you know, look, I have managed to get extra protection for ancient woodland and trees, working with the Woodland Trust, all these other bodies. We need more. We need to strengthen it. And that's gone into the housing white paper, Julian. I mean, I don't think anything like this has ever happened before. And soil. I've got soil on the agenda. I held the first ever debate on protecting our soils in Parliament. You know, they're all things that affect the growing of our food and our sustainability. And I really hope that the people of Wiverliscombe, who I know are very, very interested in these areas, will see what I've done and will actually back me instead of knocking me all the time and thinking someone else can do that better. They actually can't. I can't do any more. Well, I can actually. There's more I will do. But I'd love them to trust me, you know, and I will go forward and do it and feed ideas in. I'm very sorry I can't come to the hustings, but you know how short this election call was, and every possible body and organisation wants to hold their own individual hustings. And I did invite them to the Tacky Morris one we did the other day. That would have been the ideal place, and it was half empty, a theatre half empty.
That's,
you know,
strange.
Why didn't they all come from WIVI? You know, we've got two church
there
hustings,
isn't a bus service
we've
anymore.
Got one in Welly, and we've got one in Taunton. Oh, I could have laid them on a bus. Charles, my husband would have ferried them in and out, wouldn't you, Charles?
Okay.
I do mean that, you know. And all, and the best of luck to you all, and come and talk to me when I get re-elected. Fine. And we'll work together on some of these issues.
Okay, thank you very much. So that brings us to the end of our first interview of candidates standing in this year's general election in the Taunton Deane constituency. Other candidates on offer are Gideon Amos for Liberal Democrats, Alan Dimmock for UK Independence Party, Martin Jevon for Labour, and Clive Martin for the Greens. If you want to see them in person, then you might want to come along to the hustings in Wiverliscombe, which are being held tomorrow, Tuesday the 30th of May at 7:30 at Kingsmead, being hosted by WIVI Climate Action. Hopefully you'll be able to come along, although sadly Rebecca won't be there. So that is all from us. Thank you very much again, Rebecca, for joining us.
An absolute pleasure, Gillian, and I hope I'll be back again, because I do love community radio, as you know, having worked in many community radio stations myself.
Thank you again. So thank you. Have a good rest of the day. I'm sure you're going to be very busy. Thank you very much for listening, and do tune in again for the rest of our election interviews.